Welcome, everyone. Reading from Papa Ram Dass, the great saint from India, who left the body in 1963. And he writes about his own life here. He refers himself to third person, so something to get used to sometimes. It was at Kadri Cave, Mangalore, that Ram Dass saw Buddha in a vision. He does not remember whether it was night or daytime. Perhaps it was night. He was sitting up. His eyes were closed. The vision was seen with the inner eye. He was not conscious of his body. Mind was not functioning at the time. In certain states of meditation, the mind is active, thinking of the attributes or the image of God. There is no such thing at the time when he saw Buddha. The features clearly showed it was Buddha. Ram Dass had seen many statues in some places. There was a clear resemblance. He could feel it was Buddha. So also, he could feel it was Christ who came to him in the vision in the cave in the Himalayas. In Geneva, somebody asked Ram Dass, "How did you know it was Christ?" He had seen so many pictures, but one did not tally with the other. His brilliant face with beard was like that one you see in the picture on the wall here. Wonderful figure. When Ram Dass thinks of it, it appears before him. It is so vivid. Ram Dass had the vision of Sri Krishna in the house he lived while he was chanting Ram Nam. He saw the full figure of Sri Krishna dancing, flute in hand. That was the first vision he saw. He had these visions because he was guided spiritually by the Gita, that is the Bhagavad Gita, the Light of Asia, which is the story of the Buddha, and the New Testament. He did not pray for these visions, but they came to him out of unsought. And after they had disappeared, he never craved for them again. He was not after visions at all. He wanted to see the universe as the manifestation of God. Step by step, one has to rise up to that realization where every form, every object is seen as an expression of God, form of God. That experience can alone give one the fullest freedom from bondage of ignorance or I-ness. A divine form appears only to disappear and to leave one in darkness. In Ram Dass' case, he now feels God's presence all the 24 hours of the day. He lives, moves, and has his being in God. And Swami Ram Dass, or Papa as he is called by close disciples, was always after everyone to gain the fullest universal vision. That is to see that God is both transcendent to this universe, but is also manifesting as everything in it. And reading from Paramahansa Yogananda, where Jesus is and what he's doing now, December 26, 1943. Heavenly Father, we thank thee for sending us Jesus Christ and the great masters to inspire us to seek the kingdom and be there forever and ever. Heavenly Father, we give all of our homage to thee. Glory be to thy name. Om, peace and bliss. Heavenly Father, may thy love shine forever. I was sitting in meditation the other evening on December 24th. It was all dark. There was no light. And then who appears before me? Jesus Christ. I was so surprised. I had always prayed and asked him to come, but this time he came without my prayer. His nose is a little bit flat, but his eyes are so wonderful. I saw him four times, once as a baby, and when he came, the experience I felt I cannot describe. And I think that is why he came. He was very pleased that I had started this Christmas meditation idea. Really, it is the greatest slur on Jesus that men drink on his day and forget him completely. Jesus' life is a spiritual life. And to make it purely a social affair is terrible. It must become a sacred thing. If you honor Christ, don't think of exploiting him on that day. Jesus will be closer to you if you start with meditation on that day. And another thing is to have meditation on Saturday nights. Every day is a Christmas for me, but I am glad to see so many souls look forward to that day of meditation. There is no other way to happiness but by going within yourself. You will never find it otherwise. As Americans, you are not contented. Even though you have more than most people in other countries, inside you have a burning fire of discontent. But this teaching has come to take that away from you. Those who are coming here regularly will find that happiness. They will be drunk with the wine of God. I am all the time that way. To the last day of my life, I will try to get you there. Those who will keep coming regularly for services and classes will get there, and reserve Saturday or Sunday for meditation at least 4 hours. You spend so much time in the movies. Why not with God? If you don't attain Christ by this, you may jump on my name and say, I have told you the biggest lie ever told. God can only be known by the art of Kriya, the method that I taught you. One man came to me in India and said, I am waiting for devotion. I said, you are wasting your time. For months, that man meditated deeply, and still his soul felt dry as dust. I told him to practice Kriya. When he came back to me in 7 days, he had felt the contact of God because he was eager. The world is registered on the surface of your skin, and here, at the Christ Center, God is registered. When you consciously go there and get God quicker, God can be known only through law. It is the most easy to approach him through law. You must use the techniques India discovered. It was Jesus himself who sent this work here. He is not dead. He is watching. It doesn't please him to see the church as just big places of social gathering. Thought of God is not enough. You have to make conscious effort. We go to church for God. We don't go there to sing. Music is all right, but we should go to church for God alone. I went to many teachers in order to find God. Then I came to preach. Otherwise, I couldn't stand here and tell you about him. Why should I tell you about God if he is just a fancy in my mind? I live in his living presence always. Last night, I was asking for sunshine this morning. No answer. That means sunshine. So, after a little while, I hear the word yes. And when I look out my window this morning, there is sunshine. And I told him, this is your handiwork. You are the sunshine. There is no sunshine but you. So you see, he is a living God. It is the most wonderful thing to know him. No love, no joy, no intoxication can compare with it. The proof of the existence of God lies in joy. The proof of the existence of God lies in joy. When you sit in meditation and practice the method and feel that great joy, then you know God. And that joy is intelligent. Things begin to change for you. Everything I have ever wanted has been given to me. And you can talk to him. He will guide you in everything. This isn't just a little joy of your imagination. God is approachable. Everything comes from God. And since everything comes from God, he is much more real than all his things are. Who has become everything here but God? Why do you think he is not personal? He is personal. When he became one with God, when you become one with God, you find wave and the ocean are the same. You see yourself one with the ocean of God's presence. I and my Father are one. Well, this is my message to you, that you should live rightly. If I can change one of you that way, I will have accomplished more than thousands of churches who do not know him. I know many of you here are having God perception, and you will more and more. Your reason will be more satisfied in this work than it will ever be satisfied. The Bible is not at fault. Those who interpret it are at fault. But when you hear these explanations as they come through, so you will see the scientific truths in the Bible. So this is my message to you this morning, that you make up your mind to come with me. I don't want just to tell you about beautiful things, but I want you to go there with me. Never go to bed unless you feel you have talked with him out of the fervor of your heart. You will get far more rest that way than all the hours of your sleep. Then, whenever you are not doing anything, put your mind here at the ajna, point between the eyebrows, and say, Father, I want to be guided by you in everything. You take charge of me. I have done enough. He is more real than all others. Greater love than you have ever felt is yours if you seek him. God is in the mountains and the seas, everywhere. We're approaching this time that for all of Christendom is the most holy time of year, and that is Easter. Mother Hamilton, who was raised Catholic and met Master when she was 20 years old in 1925, and she had never heard of yoga before, she had never heard of Yogananda before, but there was a fellow where she worked who came in and helped do the books, and they would talk about philosophical things, and he had seen Master the year before. And so as he talked about it, he said, no, you must come and see him. And she thought, well, no, I'm not very interested in that, and I don't know much about it. And so finally he came in one day, and he says, I've asked my wife permission to take you if you will come. She thought, well, if it's that important to him, then I'll do it. She went, and they were some of the last people to come into the auditorium that was absolutely packed. And she said when he strode onto the stage that to her, he looked just like an angel. He was dressed in an orange robe. He had long flowing dark hair and he was just beautiful. And he began to speak and time as if stood still. And she was transfixed with him. And so at the end of the talk, for the first time, somebody had taken the concept, the idea of God as something out there. Something that Mother had been afraid of when she was growing up and put it right within her own heart, within her own soul, was a knowable presence that's something that she could experience. And so he offered to greet everybody and shake hands as they left. So Mother said, needless to say, she was standing in line. And as she got closer and closer to him, her heart started beating so hard she thought it would just fall right out onto the floor. She stood in front of him, he took her hands, and she looked into his eyes. And as she looked into his eyes, she felt an electric current come out of his eyes and just electrify her entire being from the bottom of her feet to the top of her head. And she would say, when describing this event, that from that moment on, she was his. And so she followed in the teachings, she followed in the way. The thing about spiritual masters is that they don't come in order for everyone to follow them. They come in order for us to join them and become as they are, to see the world as they see it, to know the world as they see it, and to know God as they know God. This is the greatest thing, is that we are lifted up. We are transformed. We are changed fundamentally. In the biblical language, we change from being a son of man to becoming a son of God. Now, in Jesus' vernacular, he referred to himself as both son of God and son of man. This has great metaphysical significance. As a son of man, it's the humanness in me. It's that part who identifies with this body, with this name, with the role that I play in this world, with relationships that I have, and so on. And so it is that human expression that exists within me, and for most people, this is the sum total of their experience of life. We open our eyes in the morning. We think all the things that we have to do through the day. We get dressed and we move on with our life. And we operate solely out of this human ego without realizing that there is much more to us. In the world of psychology, Sigmund Freud made a discovery about the subconscious mind. And he said that there were all of these things that were repressed and put into the subconscious mind. He was raised Jewish, but he rejected that and said that most of the descriptions in the Bible were just simply projections of the father figure, which you can understand to some extent. Angry, vengeful, and so on. Very much like a worldly father can be in some instances. But he didn't go far enough, because we see there is like the different levels of the earth. And if you go down so far in the earth, you think, oh, it's hard as rock. But if you go a little bit further, you might say, oh, it's liquid rock and it's all lava. But if you go further than that, you get into very, very dense rock again. And so you discover level after level after level as you go further and further down. And so it is with human consciousness. If we just stay on the surface of life, all we do is experience life as a normal human being. If we delve a little bit deeper, we may find this id that Freud was talking about, the things that are difficult to deal with. And so we find various means of trying to deal with these very raw emotions that can come up and impulses and feelings that exist there. And so it's when we are able to go even further than that, and that's what meditation is like. Meditation is like a diving bell, and it takes us down into the various levels of the ocean. And we can go so far down, and if we're satisfied with that, then that's where we remain. But if we go all the way to the bottom, we find there that there is the pearl of great price. That is the state of realization, of illumination, that can come when we go all the way down to the depths of consciousness. And we find there not objectionable, terrible, awful things to deal with. We may have gone through layers of that as we go down and find that great pearl of great price. But what we find in that pearl of realization is that original innocence from which we have all come from. It is the purity. It is the light of being. It is ever new joy. It is peace. It is all of those things that we consciously or secretly seek after. Everybody in this world seeks after happiness. Some people trying to find it at the bottom of a bottle. Some people through a needle. Some people through a joint. Some people through food. Some people through baking in the sun. All these various things are thought to produce happiness, and they do produce happiness to an extent, temporarily. But as soon as the effects wears off, then we're off seeking after the next thing. It's always a restless nature that is instigated by looking after this kind of happiness. And it's only when we internalize the mind and we teach it to withdraw into itself that we find the treasure that we have always sought is actually existing right inside of us. That we don't have to go anywhere. We don't have to do anything in particular in that sense in order to realize who and what we have always been. For the experience comes as you enter into that depth of realization. I have always been this, and on some level, I've always known it. And that's why I've been restless in this life. That's why I've been seeking perhaps some unnamed something. We use the word, the terminology of God, because that's what's common within the English language. And sometimes people say, well, I like everything that you teach, but could you just please not use the word God? But God is the most powerful word in the English language. And you think of the great art, the great architecture, the great poetry, the great scriptures that have all been written around it, all been used around it. And why abdicate that word to those who would misuse and abuse it? Why not rediscover the true inspiration that when Jesus looked at the lily of the field and he said, look upon this one lily, and Solomon, who was considered the greatest of kings and the wealthiest of kings, Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed as one of these. Just think of the experience that he had as he looked upon the petals of that flower, the beauty of it, the divine nature of it. And this is what we come to know as the mind is purified. At first, we live and look through as through a glass darkly. But then that glass, as we begin to purify the mind, becomes more and more clear, more pure, and we're able to see the divine nature, perhaps first within ourselves. I asked Mother one time, I said, you know, when I'm meditating and I feel God so greatly inside of me, but then I get around groups of people and even spiritual groups of people and it's difficult for me. And I feel the vibrations of it. And she said, first you find God within, then you gradually find him everywhere about you. And this is the way that it is. And perhaps in the beginning, it's easier for us to find it in nature. We're walking through the woods or we're on a mountaintop. We're out in some desert vastness. And we just feel the purity of the vibration of that area. We feel uplifted. Our vision is expanded. And yet, when we get around people or cities or different situations, we find that our consciousness is brought down and brought down and brought down. I remember one time that I was feeling such an uplifted, joyful, blissful state. And I just felt myself starting to descend like a balloon that had weights added to it. And it just started going down and down and down. And it was maddening to me. No, I didn't want to lose that interior state of consciousness. And yet, it seemed to be beyond my control. But as I continued to progress in the path, I realized that it was I, myself, who did that. That some thought had floated through my mind and I attached myself to that thought. And the attachment of that thought acted like lead on the balloon and began to bring me further and further and further down. God remembrance lifts you up. It should transform you. We were chanting the name of God beforehand. And when we chant Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, it's saying victory to God, victory to God. And Swami Ram Dass used this to take him all the way to the fullest and highest realization. Such a simple thing to be able to do, to sing God's name and to remember his attributes. O Lord, you are all love, you are all light, you are all purity, you are all joy. And by listing off of these things, you're attuning yourself to those very same qualities. You feel more bliss, you feel more upliftment, you feel more joy deep within your soul. Not because anything is being given to you in an outer sense, not because you want a trip to Hawaii or anything like that. It just simply is. It's part of your nature. It's part of your being. And this is the great revelation that comes to us as we enter into higher states of realization. This is my nature. This is the Son of God within me versus the Son of Man, which was relegated to body consciousness only and to living in this world in this ordinary kind of way. Now I feel this attunement with this higher consciousness, this higher vibration, this higher light. I feel transformed. And the bliss and the joy that I feel is expansive. And it has no beginning and it has no end. So in these Christian scriptures in which we read the description of Jesus' life, he is every man. As they make that transformation from the Son of Man to the Son of God. And what does he say? The Son of Man must die. What does that mean? The Son of Man, or the human consciousness in us, must be let go of. It must go into the background in order for the Son of God, or divine consciousness, to rise up. And that's what resurrects within us. Now, he goes to the cross, which is generally thought of as a wooden cross. But if I stand upright with my feet together and my arms outstretched, this body is in the form of the cross. And the upright section is the spine within me. And as I make that conscious ascension up the spine and the various chakras, there are the 12 disciples, which are the 6 chakras, and each one has a polarity, a positive and a negative, on each side of the spine, and that equals the 12. And so the 12 disciples represent these different aspects of spinal consciousness. As this Christ consciousness rises up within the spine, then each one of these positive and negatives are triggered. And a part of me wants to continue the transformation, and a part of me wants to resist it and fight it. And that is why it is a struggle all the way up. Now, wouldn't it be nice if there were no struggle? But, you know, physical scientists have taken these little chicks that are not yet hatched. And they think, well, poor little things, they're trying to peck and peck and peck, get their way out of the shell. We'll just help them a little bit. So they make a little crack into the egg. What happens to that chick? They don't survive. They don't live long. They're sicker. There's something within the struggle itself of getting through that shell that prepares them for life outside of the shell. And so this is something that we have to go through, and we all prefer not to. Thank you very much. And yet this mystical crucifixion is something that strengthens us and prepares us so that we might be able to make this transformation and keep it and make it our own, so that we may continuously, as both Yogananda and Ram Dass talked about, that they lived continuously in this divine consciousness. Isn't that wonderful? This is the fulfillment of the promise. And it is the promise of the ancient Judaic masters. It is the promise of the ancient Buddha and the various masters that have come in that way, the Hindus and the yogis. You look all over the world, the Sufis within the Muslim religion, and you see great, great saints. And when you read their descriptions and you take an account for some of the differences in language and culture and traditions, you see the very same descriptions for all of these various states of being. So it is not that there is one religion that is right and all others are wrong. This is a state of ignorance, and it's a state that the world is very much passing through right now. But it is something that will change, and it will come to a day where the only religion is the religion of truth, the religion of realization, the religion of divine experience, and this transformation from the Son of Man to the Son of God. And it's all over this world. It's within every individual, regardless of their culture, their language, anything. Any sincere devotee, anyone who really aspires to know the truth with their entire heart, mind, soul, and strength, will be able to attain to this. But how much better if we're given the tools for it? If we're given the straight way, we can take off through the wilderness out here and bushwhack our way. But what happens? We run into deep ravines. We get lost, perhaps. We can really get into trouble by just taking off and bushwhacking on our own. But if there's a trail there, and there's a trail that had been treaded by many different saints that have gone before us in the path of realization, and so we follow into that trail, not because it's blind faith and not because we're just worshiping the image of another person, but because that is the sure way in order to get the realization that we're seeking for. But there has to be an individual realization. There are those who teach, but they have not realized. And you cannot really teach until you have realized this truth deep within yourself. There are many traps along the way. Traps of mind, traps of body, traps of consciousness and ego. And in order to know the path, you have had to tread it yourself. And it's not an easy path. And it's not something that you can just study in books or read about or see a movie and know that you have tread that path. If you're going to climb a mountain, yes, you read books about it, you study about it, you listen to others who have done it, but you must eventually do it yourself in order to truly say you have climbed that mountain. So reading is all right, as long as it inspires us, lifts us up, informs us. But at some point, we leave behind everything else, and we delve further and further and further within ourselves. We go straight to that point of truth. There were two things that I absolutely demanded of the path when I was called to it. And I say I was called to it because I wasn't really a volunteer. I felt compelled, not by anybody outside of me, but by some deep pain that was inside of me. And I had two demands. One is that I was in such spiritual pain that I wanted bliss. That was an absolute must. But that alone wasn't enough. I also wanted to know the truth, not just something that somebody else told me. I wanted to know it for myself because I've seen it with my own eyes. I've heard it with my own ears. I've known it throughout my entire being. In a state of realization, every cell of your being resonates with the truth. It's not just an idea that comes to you. It's not just a thought that can come at one moment and then another thought comes at another moment. It is so profound, it changes you. As Papa talked about here, when he had that vision of Jesus, and then any time later, he would think on that, he would see the vision the same, but not just see it, but he would feel it as well. And this is the way that superconscious experience is. There is the subconscious, which is those things that we deposit there because we don't know what else to do with them. And then there is the conscious mind where we live all the time. The superconscious mind is above that. And when you are in a deep state of meditation, when you're feeling that ever new joy coming up inside of you, when there's some revelation of some great truth within you and every cell of your being resonates with it, this is your superconscious experience. And it is when you have a superconscious experience, whether it comes in a waking state, a sleeping state, or in a vision that you have, it stays with you. When I had spent a year in silence and seclusion, during that year, I had a vision in which Yogananda and my own guru, Mother Hamilton, came to me. And they first were out on the porch, and then they came in, and we had satsang, we had time together. And it was the most tremendous experience, and they both had such joy in their beings, and one would start feeling a wave of joy. It was like something, if somebody were very fat, you would see the fat start to roll on them as they start to shake with the laughter. But they weren't fat, it's just a feeling, a vibration that you just start rolling off of them. And it was so joyful and it was so pure. And one of them would start having this mirth come from them and this joy. And then the other would resonate with it. And it was just transformative and powerful. And so we spent this time. But any time I think of that time, as I am now, I feel them. I feel them in this room. I feel that experience. At one point, Lari Mahasha came to me in a deep vision, but it was more than a vision because when I went to Pranamada's feet, I felt his feet physically there. And there was a transmission that went from him into me at that moment. So these experiences change you so profoundly, so deeply that you are never the same again. And yet one of the great mysteries is that we can be solidly on the path and we meet into one of those obstacles, one of those disciples who's on the negative side of the spine. We're tempted away, either through fear or desire nature. Those are just twin sides to the same coin. And we can fall asleep, no matter how far we have risen, unless we've gone all the way over the top. We fall asleep to our spiritual nature. It feels like we did something that we did a long time ago and we can barely remember it. And so Swami Ram Dass was so terrified of this happening to him, he refused any sleep at all. And he would stay awake all through the night chanting God's name and remembering his attributes. And so he never wanted to go to sleep. Now we have to understand that there's a default nature inside of us that will go back to the Son of Man, will go back to the ego, unless we're constantly striving for divine consciousness. But it's not just our own human effort. There's also grace within us. And there's a powerful intelligence, and there's a power that's operating inside of us. And it helps us. In fact, we would not be able to make it if grace were not active within us. And so it's more than just having our own efforts in doing this, but it's also this grace that comes in and lifts us up. So we've all come together today in satsang. In India, it's called satsang. Sat is the eternal self. It is said that God has three aspects to it, even as the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost in the Christian terminology. There is Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat is the eternal self. Chit is consciousness, pure consciousness. And Ananda is bliss. And these are the three eternal attributes of divine consciousness. The self always exists, and as you rise up into this divine consciousness, you know that you have always existed. You were not born when this body was born, but the consciousness has always existed. That consciousness is part of spirit, awareness, being awake. And that is what the Buddha means, the awakened one, to become awake to divine consciousness. And that Ananda, or bliss, is also part of this divine consciousness. So we come into this state of awakening. And when we enter into that, we know that we have always existed, that we were never born, that we never die, and that our nature is blissful, joyful. In fact, it is said that this entire creation is a blissful expression. It comes out of Ananda. And it is a blissful expression. But how far we come from that blissful expression in this world. Man's inhumanity to man. Fighting with each other, fussing with each other, not understanding the divine nature. Because once we apprehend the divine nature within every man, how could we hold anything against them? They are God in human form. Doesn't mean that they always behave correctly, but that we know deep down there is a place of connection that transcends differences of our humanness, where we are all connected in our divinity, and that it is eternal, unbroken, and always blissful. And when we become conscious of that, we become free. Free within spirit, free within soul, no longer bound as we once were. So as we come together in this satsang, sang means association, connection. Religion means connect, to gather together. And its fundamental meaning is the same. It's to come together around truth, around God, around the path and transformation and upliftment and light and joy. That's what it should be. That's what it should be. And so let us today release our souls into spirit and feel the greatness of that divine spirit operating within us and all around us. When it comes time to open these eyes, let us look out through those eyes and see the divine nature of everything and everyone. At first we practice that. We make an effort to see it. But when we make this transformation, it becomes a living reality. It is not just a thought projection. It is not just a practice that we have taken up. It becomes a living reality. And then we are able to say, with all of the great saints and all the great spiritual masters down through time, I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. And we know the truth of it. It's no longer an affirmation that we strive for and hope for, but it's our deepest and best part of us, and we know that we know it. So will you please join me in Mother's prayer of perfection. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence. In every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Ever manifested to this world through perfect service to the divine in each and every one. Sit just for a few minutes, tuning ourselves to that divine consciousness, feeling that upliftment. Body, mind, and soul. bright light of God for tonight. Potluck, and then let's stay.